Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry, with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great, too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
The 373rd edition of the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by Bird Dog Shorts. Dominate summer with an amazing pair of shorts and a free Yeti-style tumbler when you order over at birddogs.com/pool. That's birddogs.com/pool.
Howdy ho, Degenerinos, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast and the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, episode 373. Going to go out to my father-in-law, whose birthday is today. So happy birthday, father-in-law. You don't listen to the show, but happy birthday anyway. I would be the host of the podcast who likes his in-laws. That would be Jeff Chalk's box. That's how you can tell which one is which. I hinted with an episode title a few episodes ago how Chalk's no more. And I just call myself Chalks. I don't know if I can still call myself Chalky after the results last night. One of our listeners was seemingly hoping Chalks no more meant that I was leaving the show, but no, I am still here. I'm not going anywhere. KCP is not coming back. But yeah, it was a non-Chalky night for me and my picks. My co-host did okay with some of his picks as well. I'm sure he'll have a nice spin on it. Doesn't usually have nice spins on his in-laws, but he does have nice spins on his picks. It's one and only Daniel Gumby Vreeland. Hello.
I do have to say, I'm sure at some point in time, KCP will come back. You'll go on a cruise or yeah, something will happen. KCP will be back for those of you who are holding on hope. He'll still come back. And of course I have a positive spin. Benoit Saint-Denis won. We hit a 260 underdog. Yep. And yep. It was like one of the least sweaty bets I've ever watched materialize in real time.
Yep. It dominated from start to finish.
It was like right up there with the, what did we get Lauren Murphy at way back in the day? Like plus 200 to beat Misha Tate when she battered her. And this was a bigger underdog and a worse battering. We'll talk all about that fight when we get to it. But that was, I don't need to put anything in perspective. I can just say Benoit Saint-Denis.
There you go. That's all that needs to be said. BSD, as people in the SGPN Slack like to say.
I was supposed to dedicate an episode to somebody too, and you didn't even ask if I had somebody.
Next episode.
Okay.
Next episode.
All right.
Another episode coming down the pipe.
Yeah. He knows who it is. It's coming.
I know who it is. Yep. I know. He's been killing it the past few weeks. So, it was a pretty exciting fight night, I guess. People were saying it was their favorite fight. People in the Discord were saying it was their favorite fight night in the Apex. Maybe that's because their bets were hitting, but you know, it was pretty good action, an action event. A few decisions, but a lot of exciting fights.
Yeah, it was a fun event because even the ones that were, like with the exception of a couple of the early fights, the first two fights were kind of stinkers. But after that, even the ones that went to decision, like Michael Morales, Max Griffin was fun. I mean, I guess Grant Dawson versus Demiris Magulov was kind of one sided. So maybe that was a little less fun. But it was fun for people who had underdog Grant Dawson.
Yep. Which raised your hands. Everyone listening to the podcast should have had that because we told you that was a very solid pick. Everyone on the podcast should have Bird Dog shorts by now, everyone listening, because I've told you week in and week out how great Bird Dogs are. If you still aren't sold on them, here's another pitch for you. Bird Dogs make you look good. That's pretty much all you really need to say, but I'll tell you more. Bird Dogs stretch khaki shorts are designed to fit slimmer through the thigh and leg, giving you a truly sculpted look. Bird Dog shorts do the exact same thing as a Lululemon, but fit way better. They fit way better than the regular shorts that are made of a stiff, restricting cotton. Bird Dogs fix this issue by inventing cloud knit fabric that looks just like khaki, but stretches so you get a way slimmer fit without having to sacrifice movement. Bird Dogs uses anti-stink, sweat, wicking fabric that keeps you cool and dry all day long. I'm sure plenty of fighters last night could have used some Bird Dogs in the cage there. I'm sure there's a lot of stink, sweat action going on in the cage. If you are sold, hopefully you are, go to birddogs.com/pool. And enter promo code POOL for a free Yeti style tumbler with your order. That's birddogs, birddogs.com/POOL for free Yeti style tumbler. You won't want to take your Bird Dogs off. We promise you. All right. July 1st, Canada Day. No Canadians on the card, but it was a fun event. And the person I designated as a honorary Canadian, the Frenchman, Benoit Saint-Denis, did come through. Went down the UFC Apex, as mentioned. Noted anti-Semite Mel Gibson was in the crowd. That was good to see, right? That's right on brand for the UFC.
For Sean Strickland yep. fight? Yeah, that makes
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, and I see he congratulated Sean Strickland, which is right on brand as well. So the UFC is going to UFC. Main event. I got right. It didn't look good after the first round. Seemed like most of the discard was with Gumby in this one. What a shock. They're in on Abus Magomedov. Didn't realize he was only going to show up with not even a quarter tank of gas. I guess he had a third of a tank of gas, a bit more than a quarter, because he lasted a round. Actually, no, this was a five-round fight. He had a 20% tank of gas, a fifth of a tank of gas. Because he looked fantastic in the first round. Really putting it on Strickland, mixing up his strikes. Strickland didn't really have an answer for it at all. And then the second round started, and Strickland picked him apart from pillar to post, 4:20 into the second round. The referee, finally, mercifully, after about 28 uncontested strikes on the ground, decided that that was enough. Magomedov pretty much seemed like he gave up at that point and just crumbled and let Strickland fill him up with punches. So Sean Strickland, TKO, which you don't see very often, came through. I didn't predict it would be a TKO, but I did have Strickland at minus 138. I think I was one of the only people in the world that had Strickland, but he came through.
Yeah, it was, I will say, my breakdown of the fight for that first round was spot on, right? Like, Abus was going to be a little bit better with the hands. He understood the reach better. The pitter-patter jab of Sean Strickland wouldn't be enough to deter him. And if he wanted a takedown, he could grab it. He literally did all of those things in the first round. All that I said about Abus Magomedov there was just spot on in the first round. And the wild thing is like, I've seen him go five rounds before. You know, when he was in the PFL, he did two rounds against Gassan Umulatov, and then he did three rounds against Sadabusai all in the same night, back when they used to make their playoffs. You know, their class was three rounds and you had to do the first two in the first night. And so like he's gone five rounds before and he looked great in that Sadabusai fight doing essentially what he did to Sean Strickland for a round. So I don't know if it was, you know, maybe a little bit of the layoff, maybe a little bit of being in your first main event, maybe a little bit, maybe Strickland hurt him with something to the body, but it was all very confusing to me to see him sort of melt away like that.
Maybe he shouldn't have been thrust into a UFC main event after one fight against the not up to snuff opponent, perhaps.
Yeah, Dustin Stoltzfus, if you're trying yes. to remember who. Yeah, Dustin Stoltzfus.
I remember it after I said that. Yeah.
Yeah, and
too much too soon, perhaps.
Yeah, probably. The thing that it seemed like a good opportunity for him, though, right? Because like,
oh, it definitely was. Yeah,
he's the type of guy who has had a long career. It's not like he's somebody coming into the UFC at 6-0 and they put him in a main event in his second fight. You know, he had like a ton of experience. He had fought in some real high level guys. So like, I don't hate that they put him in it, but I do think that like this shows what happens when you move a guy a little bit too fast up. What did you, I got to ask you this. What did you think of Sean Strickland pretty much demanding a title shot afterwards?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Well, he does have a one fight win winning streak at middleweight, win streak overall. So definitely.
He did recently get beat by Jared Cannonier, who looked way better recently against a much better opponent. So that's not happening.
He lost to Cannonier and Pereira, so no shame there. But yeah, I can see him. He's the type of guy the UFC seems to like. Always shows up. Not the most exciting fights, but they love putting him in main events somehow. So I could see him getting a title shot. I'm not saying he deserves one, because like you said, Cannonier obviously would deserve one over him, but I can see it happening.
I don't necessarily agree with you. I agree that they like sticking him in main events, because I think his press conferences get clicks and stuff like that. But remember, this is a guy who at one point in time was on a 6-fight win streak, including 5 at middleweight. And they were like, do you know who we should give him? Alex Pajeda in his like third UFC fight, who's, I think Pajeda was unranked at the time. And so they were like, let's give him Alex Pajeda. And like, Pajeda knocked him silly, right? So like, yeah, they do like sticking him in main events. They like that he shows up. But also like, this kind of was a trap fight too. Again, they had him fighting an upstart guy who is only in his second fight, who I think they saw that they could market well because he's from Germany, but he's also got the Russian name. He's got, you know, multiple countries behind him. You know, he's correct. He's certainly fun to watch. I think the UFC likes that they can market him on fight night cards, but I don't think that he's like a shoe-in for a title shot anytime soon.
You said multiple, which made me think multiple regional championships, which made me say correct automatically. So.
But he also has multiple countries. on his
true. Correct. Correct. Maybe the UFC didn't know Strickland's all his views on women at that point. Maybe now they're like, oh, this guy's great. We have views like this too. Whatever he said after got bleeped out up here in Canada.
Yeah, it got bleeped out here too, or at least on the feed I was watching. So, he said some pretty terrible things in the press conference before too. But I think that's why they like him for fight night main events, though, right? It's just like he's gonna get the mic time that they need. They're gonna put it on YouTube. It's gonna get a bajillion clicks. His social media numbers have got to be off the charts, because, you know, love his message or hate his message, and it's usually way more of the latter.
Hopefully,
people are talking about it, right? I'm sure there are people on social media who like it too. Social media is a funny place, but
it's not funny. Yeah, a funny place.
But funny as in peculiar. But it's like, yeah, like he draws the click. So I think he's a shoe in to probably main event more fight night cards and UFC on ESPN cards and stuff like that. But I think he's a ways away from a title shot, especially because, you know, Izzy'd kill him, right? Like that's not a fight. Izzy's a terrible matchup for him. So look for him main eventing Bo Nickel's first headliner.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Basically, all that was determined last night is Magomedov is not the real deal. I was going to say at least not at this point, but he's fought so many fights already.
I know
he's not old, but
maybe he's just like mentally not there yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
Too soon, but I think he could still do it.
So we learned that, and we know the only other thing that's the only actual real guarantee out of the main event result is we're going to get more Sean Strickland fight nights. UFC fight night Strickland versus fill in the blank is what we're going to get. So
Bo Nickel,
fine. Whether you like it, love it, or hate it, that's what you're going to get. We loved, I love the main event, just the result was good, and the fight ended quickly, which I always appreciate. Lightweights, co-main event, we both love this one. We had Grant Dawson, even money, Demir Ismagulov. He schooled him, 30-26, 30-27, 30-27. All those cards are probably could have gone 30-25, perhaps even. He just dominated Ismagulov on the ground. Super slick grappling, decent ground and pound. Yeah, he just looked fantastic. We had him, like I said, at plus 100. He was my underdog of the week. because I'm a coward and I picked the plus 100 underdog, but nonetheless did come through. It sucks that he's at lightweight because there's a lot of guys like him at lightweight and a lot of guys ahead of him still. But yeah, looked real good last night.
Yeah, he is. It's a prototype at lightweight, right? It's
sure like is. Yep. Him, everybody ahead of him. It's the same.
Him, Sarukian, Gamera, like all of those guys are the same person. Yep. They're all the same person, except for I'm going to say this. I think Grant Dawson's jiu-jitsu is better than those two. I think those two might have better wrestling than him, but I think his jiu-jitsu is slightly better. Like his back takes, his back control, all that kind of stuff. Like I've never seen anybody do something like that to Ismagulov. No. And that's given that Ismagulov has lost a fight or two. So like nobody's ever made him look that bad once he hit the mat. So I'm excited. I think him and Sarukian would be a really fun fight. If you wanted to give him somebody like Rafael Dos Anjos, cause you just want to get him some name value or something, I'm fine with that too. Hell, let him beat the shit out of Michael Chandler. Since Chandler's definitely not getting that, Conor McGregor fight.
Nope. It's true. It's true. Yeah. Onward and upward for, Dawson, a guy we've been in on for a little while here. Hopefully he can keep it rolling and keep getting fights booked and keep making weight. That's the main thing. He's massive for like, he looks massive and he has trouble making the weight sometimes. So, yeah.
Yeah. I know you've never missed an episode of the Top Turtle podcast. So, this is no surprise to you, but he said in his interview a couple weeks ago to me, I asked him about, you know, like, is it much easier to make weight now that you're at 55? And he goes, no, it's terrible. I got, he got bigger. So like he came up from 45 to 55, and then he bulked up, so he's having the same miserable weight cuts he used to have down a weight class.
Well, just look at him. Like, look at him in there last night. He's massive. The massive
lightweight. Yeah, the fact that he was ever at 45 is crazy to me.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. What I thought was a little crazy, transition to the next fight, people in our Discord weren't that impressed with Michael Morales. I thought he looked fantastic against Max Griffin. Not a fan of the showboating unless you're going to finish the guy right after you showboat, which he didn't do. But Max Griffin doesn't get finished by anyone, basically. Morales, after coming out slow, losing the first round, just put it on Max Griffin after that. Too big, too fast, too long, everything that we predicted. Too good of a striker. Actually, his grappling was what might have been the big story last night. His grappling defense and wrestling defense was on point. 29, 28 across the board, onwards and upwards for this guy. After the first round, I was thinking, okay, here we go. This is going to be the classic prospect loss. Wouldn't have been anything to be ashamed of, because like I said, Max Griffin is a tough guy and a good fighter. But Morales turned around and we hit him at minus 245.
Yeah, I get what they're saying in the Discord about not being super pumped about it, just because he's such like a hype prospect, right? He's a young kid. He's got an undefeated record. You know, he was supposed to, you know, he's a negative 250 favorite, so probably a lot of people playing that Morales KO prop because it was the way to make it more intriguing. And he lost the first round, and it did look like he tired a little bit. And to your point, he showboated when he probably could have put his foot on the gas and put him away, or at least tried to. But he also probably, if he had tried to put him away, he might have ran out of gas and lost the third round, wound up losing that fight. So what I liked about Morales in this fight the most is that he learns a lot of the lessons that fighters learn in a prospect loss, also without having to take the loss.
Right.
Because he learned about dealing with like a crafty striker. He learned about dealing with somebody who's really tough, like Max Griffin. Like Max Griffin is a great guy to learn about yourself from. And Michael Morales, I think, learned a lot about what it means to fight at this level from Max Griffin. And also, like I said, he took home the win.
Yeah, Max Griffin, like I said, he doesn't get stopped. He's been stopped once, and that was by Colby Covington. And he is, how many fights has he had? He's had 29 total fights, so he's not a guy you're going to finish. A lot of those jabs and strikes would have dropped a mere mortal welterweight, but that's not who Morales was fighting last night. And you're talking about gas tank, very good point, because he, just like Dawson, he's massive for his weight class. He's a huge welterweight.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
So onwards and upwards for him. I don't care if people are poo-pooing it a bit. I'm looking forward to seeing what he does next, because I think he's got a bright future. I was thinking this could be a title challenger at the very least in the next few years. So we shall see. Women's flyweight next. This was one of my big hits. Arianna Lipsky came through against Melissa Gatto. Split decision, 28-29, 30-27, 29-28. You love 30-27 split decisions for sure. There was some
That's our boy Sal D'Amato.
Yep. Wacky scores last night. I had Lipsky at plus 200. Wasn't feeling super great about it, but then once the fight started, I wasn't really scoring it. There was too much going on here. I was getting distracted, but watching it, I was feeling like Lipsky was winning the fight. But then when I saw on the striking stats on the screen and I saw what the live odds were, I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I'm not paying close enough attention here. But apparently I was right. Lipsky did win. Some wacky media members agreed that she won. This was not a robbery by any stretch of imagination. Very close fight. Maybe the right person won. Maybe they didn't. I'll take my plus 200 win, though.
I thought Gatto won. I gave her the first and the second. But again, I don't think it was – I don't think she did enough to put her away. I will say that this car – or this decision had the who's who of MMA judges. Did you see the list?
Adelaide Bird,
Sal D'Amato, Chris Lee. If we could have added Barry Luxemburg.
Douglas Crosby, and then we could have had a five set.
Barry Luxemburg's the GOAT, though.
That he did give an episode name after him.
Yeah, that guy rules.
Lipsky looked okay, and Gatto was probably running too much. Wasn't really engaging enough.
Yeah.
And she got a grapple too, which was surprising. Hey, that was maybe Lipsky's turning things around here.
Yeah, I think Lipsky's turning things around. By the way, I did a little deep dive. Speaking of Barry Luxemburg. Way back in the day, because I was like, I wonder if this guy's been being an idiot forever. He's been judging UFC fights since like 2013, and he once scored a fight for, you remember Sarah Kaufman?
Of course, Canadian. Of course, yeah. I know her.
He scored Sarah Kaufman 29-28 over Valentina Shevchenko.
Oh, new champion.
It wouldn't have been a title fight back then. Because I think that was when Shevchenko was still 135. But Sarah Kaufman beat Valentina Shevchenko, according to Barry Luxemburg.
Barry, like Dan's just trying to distract. Deflect that I hit this one.
Yeah, I mean, like, you hit it. I don't know. Like, is this a fight we want to spend a lot of time on, or do we want to talk
about the fact
that we both picked Benoit Saint-Denis in the next fight?
I will say Gatto, I was at least high on her after first two fights, but not looking so hot now.
Yeah, I think, the first two fights that she had didn't really age well. Victoria Leonardo seemed like a prospect. Sajara Eubanks looked like she was not dead yet when she got beat by Gatto. And now, in retrospect, like those two wins weren't probably as good as they could have been. If she just let her hands go a little bit more, I think she'd had a little bit more success there.
Yep, definitely. Before we move on to my back-to-back plus 200 or higher hits, I'm going to tell you about Underdog Fantasy. This fits right in. We're right in the middle of an Underdog run for me. We are brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Best Ball Mania 4 is here, and Underdog Fantasy is giving away $15 million in prizes. Underdog Pick'em is also a great way to get down on your favorite MLB and NFL season player props. So many ways to win over on Underdog, and Underdog is available in so many states. Head over to UnderdogFantasy.com and use promo code SGPN for 100% deposit bonus up to $100. That's UnderdogFantasy.com, promo code SGPN.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great, too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
All right. Benoit Saint-Denis came through, was not even in question, even though Bonfim was kind of clowning, which he, I think.
He didn't clown him. He just told him to keep kicking him in the ribs. And yeah, so no. He did.
So he did. And then I saw his demeanor change pretty quickly after one of those kicks.
He's like, oh, yeah, this sucks.
Yeah. Benoit Saint-Denis, not just a grappler. He was battering him on the feet. Ismael Bonfim, we're talking about. The lesser of the Bonfims is what his nickname is and shall remain now. Submission, rear naked choke, 448 into the first round. Saint-Denis put it on him. As Gumby mentioned in the Discord, this is a big Discord episode, I'm sorry. He could be one of our Mount Rushmore fighters now after hitting plus 260 for us. We were liking him anyway since he entered the UFC, but this I think has solidified his status for us.
I think I've never not picked Benoit Saint-Denis. I think I've picked him in every single fight, including the Elizu Zaleski Dos Santos fight. I picked him in.
Yeah, I think you did pick him there. Yep.
Yeah, he was a big underdog, took it on short notice, up a weight class. Obviously, he did not win, but it was a nice moral victory. I haven't submitted my official rankings yet as of this morning, but I think he's a top 15 lightweight. Ooh. You know, right now listed at 15 is Grant Dawson. You got to imagine he's going way up. Ismagulov was 12. You got to imagine he's going down, possibly out with that loss, because, man, his resume looks really bad in retrospect, too. So we're talking about, like, would you pick Benoit Saint-Denis to beat Demir Ismagulov?
Yes.
Yeah, I would.
I would. Yep.
And like, other guys on that list are, like, Matt Frivola, Renato Moicano, probably somebody like Brad Riddell just outside of the top 15. Like, would you pick him to beat those guys? I mean, like, you'd at least be giving it thought, and that's what the top 15 is. And so, like, he might be a top 15 lightweight right now.
Fantastic. I'm checking the rankings I do on my Substack. That would be moneymma.substack.com. I run rankings twice a week there based on performance. So I base it on who the fighter fought, what the person's record was at the time, whether they finished them, how recent the fight was, all that type of stuff. So subscribe so you can get those sent to you in your inbox. He's right about 20 right now, so he's getting there very, and this is only after 3 wins in the UFC, so he's definitely knocking on the door of the top 15. So Gumby is correct there. And then things didn't start off so well in the main card. Bruno Ferreira did not come through. Fahea, he was also my prop pick. I thought he was going to win by KO, because somebody told me Nursultan Ruziboyev was a sloppy striker who's going to get countered. But boy, he caught a leg kick and destroyed Bruno Ferreira with knockout punches. A head bouncing off the canvas style knockout, only at minute 17 into the first round.
Did we learn anything about Ruziboyev? Because I don't know. No. I don't know necessarily that I'm going to say he's not a sloppy striker. I mean, the counter he landed was sharp. But like, you know, any it's even hard, the sloppy striker lands a big counter one time. We know he's fucking huge now, which I guess I didn't expect him to be that much bigger, but he looked a lot bigger. I'm not sure I'm sold on him yet. His takedown defense is kind of rusty, and I want to see more of him now for sure.
Definitely. So the main card, that was the only one I got wrong, which was fantastic. I went 5-1. Gumby went 3-3. Boo, Gumby. All right.
Prelims. I had a 260 underdog.
That's true. that does make things better. Main event of the prelims, Renat Fakhretdinov did what we thought he would do. Destroyed Kevin Lee. Kevin Lee is not at this level anymore, and it's been quite a few years since he's been at a top level in the UFC. They really threw him in with the shark here, and that's what we had said originally, and that's what happened. Renat stunned him on the feet, dropped him, then guillotine choked him. Took a long time before Herb Dean realized that Kevin Lee was unconscious. It was only 55 seconds in real time, but Kevin Lee would seem to be dead for quite a while there. Luckily he popped back to it right after the choke was released, but yeah, I don't know if this has shown us anything about Fakhretdinov, because like I said, Kevin Lee's been, in my eyes, he's been shot for years now.
Hey, I mean, his hands look really good. That's true. Yeah, that's a takeaway, is that like Renat's Renat's hands looked as sharp as they ever have. And granted, we only got to see him strike for like 30 seconds. I like that he went for a guillotine and didn't jump it. Like, can we give him props for that?
Sorry, I ran away from my mic for a second. Yes, we definitely, we do not like jumping gillies in the Discord. So yeah. Yeah, no, it's true what you said about the striking. It was good to see him do some damage on the feet, but yeah. This was both our lock pick, but I think it says more about Kevin Lee's lack of future than it does about Fakradinas, but onwards and upwards for Renat. And he has a fun name to say, so I'm all for it. Featherweights, Joannison Brito, fun name to say as well. Fought Weston Wilson. I'm not one of those people who say, oh, that guy's scared, that guy's scared, like people like to say, but he looked kind of nervous.
He looked nervous. Yeah.
Ooh, maybe that's just his face. Joannison Brito
hits like a truck. So, you know,
maybe he has resting, worried face, but I don't know. Weston Wilson did not come through. He got knocked out 254 into the first round. He got knocked out going for a leg lock, heel hook, and Brito, who was dominating the fight up to that point, decided, nah, I'm getting sick of this guy hanging on my leg, and just ground and pounded him into oblivion. We had him at minus 1205. Good for us.
I will say Weston Wilson looked better than I thought he would. Some of those leg lock attempts, like he was getting, he was making Brito work, which is more than you could say for some of the other leg lock attempts we saw, like out of Petrovic and stuff like that in the night. Like this was a, that was a sad, I think. I'll save it for when we're talking about her. I have a lot of takes, but anyway, yeah, we don't have to talk. Negative 1205. He beat the crap out of him. Weston Wilson probably shouldn't be in the UFC.
Nope. But he'll get another fight, 'cause that's the way it works, especially when you step in short notice. Yeah, a lot of our friends seem to have Finnish props on Brito, so people made some money off it, which was good. Carajosa did not look the greatest, but did come through. I wasn't sure who was winning this fight, but this was another one, split decision over Yana Santos. Santos looked very good in the first round, looked like vintage Santos with her striking and sadly with her clinching, a lot of clinching going on. Ended up losing a split decision to Carajosa, 28-29, 29-28, 29-28. We were in on Hosa. Doesn't really improve my thoughts on Hosa heading forward, or Santos, obviously.
It drags my thoughts on Santos down quite a bit. Like I thought Hosa was going to win, but I thought she looked better than that. So the fact that she could go in kind of half-assedly and still win the fight, I think it says a lot more about Santos than it does Hosa. So, also Sal D'Amato, the only one who scored it for Yana Santos. Anybody out there clamoring for Santos to get it has to tell people that they side with Sal D'Amato.
Half-assedly is a good name for our episode, even though it's not half-assedly, but you said it. I like it. It's going to stick. Half-assedly. Right. this one, I missed the first round, Sally, and, because it was screwy up here in Canada, the way, this was broadcast first. We had to watch the early prelims on UFC Fight Pass, which is fine. But then they stopped after two fights, and apparently TSN TV was not airing it yet. So this one fight was on TSN's app, so I didn't get to it until the second round. And by that point, Elvis Brenner was looked like Ric Flair in his prime, with his blonde hair all red. Guram Kutsulatse was putting it on him until he wasn't, and Elvis Brenner TKO'd him. 317 into the third round. Like I said, I can't really break down the fight too much. Maybe Gummy can, since I'm assuming he saw the whole thing, but we have Kutsulatse minus 549, and that got hit. A lot of people were cursing him in the Discord after this performance, but fight of the night performance nonetheless.
For anybody who was cursing him, I literally said on the show on Wednesday, do not put him in your parlays.
Stop. Yeah, you did.
I said, stop before you put him in your parlays, because this guy, while very good, is fighting a shoot-the-box guy who's tough as nails and doesn't go away and might possibly just have the wrestling defense to win this fight. And he didn't have just barely have the wrestling defense. He had the wrestling advantage in this fight. And my goodness, dude, when those shoot-the-box guys start moving forward, they just don't stop coming forward. You know, Brenner, bad dude in there. Guram has some of the problems that made me think twice about picking him in the past and made me say, don't put him in a parlay at negative 550. And it's just that, like, you know, he kind of It's not that he can't strike. It's not that he can't grapple. It's not that he can't work against the cage, but just like, there's nothing he does that like dazzles you. You know, like he's a grinder and he's pretty good at grinding. But like, if the other guy has an amazing gas tank and better boxing and can grind back, like Kutatsulase is going to lose a lot of those fights. And Brenner showed him how. So, and yep. You know, man, Brenner with those body shots too, just vicious.
That, yeah, that will end the fight quickly. It will take the gas out of a guy. And shoot a box guy, he probably was bleeding when he came into the cage, for all we know, right? More than likely.
That was a pretty pretty gnarly cut too. I was worried it was going to get stopped.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah, like the main event. We mentioned the main event very closely, very nearly got stopped only a minute or two into it after, or even less than a minute after an eye poke. So, but yeah, lots of blood, but. Brenner came through. This lady did not come through. I'm blaming Gumby because he had me sold on her. But Luana Carolina took care of Ivana Petrovic. Petrovic did not look so hot in her UFC debut. 29-28 across the board.
I think we got to get off of women prospects. And I don't mean to Maybe. Be mean, but this is like the third one in a row who I was like, yes. She's like great this on the regional
one.
Scene.
She's the one, Dan.
Because I said that about Jackie Amorim. Right. I said it about Bruno Brazil. And I've said it about Petrovic. And like, not that I haven't whiffed on prospects before, but it does seem like I'm whiffing on an absurd amount of women's prospects right now. And I wonder if that's just like the level of what they're fighting on the regional circuit versus in the UFC is so different. Like there's just like a larger standard deviation when it comes to women's prospects than it does to men's prospects who are almost UFC caliber. But man, like her, not that her wrestling looked amazing regionally, but it looked good enough to get the job done against somebody like Luana Carolina. And she went in there and like Carolina was manhandling her.
Yeah. It does make sense. Women's MMA is a newer sport than the men's side. So it would make sense that the regional scene is not built up to the level that the male side is at this point. So makes sense. Your theories there. So,
yeah. And I also wonder too, like not that, Amorim didn't fight in LFA too, cause she did, but all three of them are international prospects too. You know, two from Brazil and one from Europe now, Norway, I believe, Petrovic is from. So, possibly that just like fighting internationally against women's prospects are making them look better than I thought they would. But yeah, it was a brutal because you could tell right away. That was the other thing. Like you could tell 5 seconds into the fight you weren't getting what you wanted.
Yep, it's true. So we shall keep that in mind going forward, picking these fights. And then the opener I hit, Alexander Romanov, he's back to his fat, chunky king self, and I think he's happier for it. He took care of Blagoy Ivanov in a horrible fight, which is what was predicted by most people. 30-27 across the board. I had Romanov minus 135. This does not make me feel any better about Romanov going forward, but he hit it for me.
Yeah, I actually read an article about an interview he did where he said that the reason he got big again, he said some really, really terrible things happened to him. And then he wouldn't elaborate on what those terrible things were.
Oh no.
So he gained the weight back in a depression and then fought Volkov. So like that explains maybe some of the performance of like why he quit against Volkov, but I guess, he's like seeing a mental coach now or a psychologist or whatever. He's seeing somebody now to talk about things and sort of work through some of them. It looked like he was in a little bit better of a mental space when he failed on a takedown, but man, that still wasn't prospect Romanov, right?
No.
Which is kind of what I predicted. I predicted he wouldn't be prospect Romanov and Ivanov would have enough of that. He ultimately didn't, but like, I'm still not picking Romanov against anybody in the top 15 right now. And it's heavyweight.
He's in the top 15, sadly.
I don't think I have him ranked if I remember correctly. But like, yeah, I'm not terribly impressed. I don't think he could hang with, like, would you pick him over? I do have him ranked. I just looked at my rankings. Yeah. This division's so bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Man.
Yeah, I don't even know who I would. Yeah, this division sucks, man.
Yeah, I'm not. Hopefully he is, or he's on his way to getting in a better spot. But we don't like our chunky guys, sad chunky guys. We like him being happy chunky guys.
Yeah, he needs
happy
to be
and healthy.
Happy chunky guys. But dude, I'm exactly. looking at the list of people who are not ranked, being like, well, who else is so bad?
Heavyweight's not so great. Yeah, the heavier you get, the worse the talent pools get. My picks, not bad. Not bad at all. The more the night wore on, the better my picks got. 9-3 overall. Classic Jeff finally is back. $569 I ended up winning. So I am only down 3% money this year. So I'm scratching my way back. 60% hit rate. Gumby went 6-6, lost $78. He's at 54% hit rate, down 5% of his cash. So you were only like $70 behind me heading into the night. And now I've got you doubled again. You're like almost 700 behind. But
that's okay. There's still time.
But
yes, there's still time. There's
still time. All right. Our fancy picks. We both have Fakhrudinov as our locks. Gumby is up 13% money on his locks, hitting 75% of his locks. Fantastic, Gumby. Bravo.
Talk about my dogs, though, because I think that's better.
All right. Dogs. He has St. Denis. Check. I had Dawson check. He is up 18% return on investment on his dogs. He's hitting 48%, which is good enough, obviously, when you're hitting plus 260 dogs. So fantastic for that. Then we both whiffed on our props. He had Gatto TKO. Definitely didn't happen. I had Fahea KO. Definitely didn't happen. Neither of them even won. So I'm still up barely. I'm up 0.4% money on my props. Gumby's down 3% on his props. I'm down lots on my locks and dogs. That's why I didn't even mention those. And then the Hungry Jong Superfan Parlay, neither of them came through. Oh, wait a minute.
No, it did.
Dawson decision.
Dawson by decision was a plus 265 prop that I hit too. So it wasn't my official prop of the week, but I did hit a pretty massive prop there. So,
hey, if it's even better if it's in the real world. If it's real money, even better.
That's right.
So he had Dawson decision hit. Petrovic inside the... inside the distance, definitely didn't hit. Nope. But that's okay. As for the real world money winners last night, bonus awards, Brenner Kutsalatse, obviously won fight of the night. Strickland Ruzaboyev won performance of the night. So 50K for all those people. We're back.
By the way, I just want to quickly, how does Sean Strickland get it and not Benoit Saint-Denis?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess
one beat up a tired guy and the other one beat the stuffing out of a prospect that he was supposed
to
beat.
That's true.
Like that's criminal.
Because submissions aren't cool. That's why.
It was cool though.
Yeah. Or Fakhrudinov.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Fakhrudinov choking a dude cold.
Yeah, plus he had him almost knocked out on the feet too. So yeah. Yeah, you're right. Strickland should not have won that, but
no.
Because he was getting, I think they get like 20% more for fighting in main events too. So he was already getting paid. He didn't need another 50K. Guys making 12,000 to fight need the 50K. But anyhow, we don't get to decide these things, sadly. UFC is on the road, kind of, just down the street. T-Mobile Arena on Saturday. UFC 290. It's pay-per-view time again. So it's going to be a good card. Even though we did lose our Jack Della Maddalena Sean Brady fight, which is sad. Have you heard anything about Jack staying on the card?
Yeah, he's supposed to get an opponent. I guess they're waiting for somebody to officially take it and settle on weight and stuff. But I've heard Kevin Holland's kind of in. Chris Curtis is kind of Chris Curtis is kind of in. wait for this one. Joaquin Buckley's kind of in.
Oh, what a surprise!
Yeah,
you were joking about that.
No, that was no joke. You
mentioned all that in the Discord. It's all
three of those. No. All three of those guys are like reportedly kind of in on this fight. So you're probably gonna get one of those names. Somebody in the Discord mentioned that Renat Fakhrudinov probably is still close to being on weight and could make it for next week. I really hope that doesn't happen.
We don't need that. It would be more competitive, but we don't need it.
It would be a great fight, but I think Jack Della beats him, and then we lose. Well, and then, like, what does it do for Jack Della? What does it do for Renat? Like, sure, maybe it wouldn't hurt his stock because he's doing this on super short notice. But, like, nah, get that guy a full camp and get him a fun fight again. And find somebody to sacrifice to the JDM god.
Yes, he's one of our boys as well. All right, we'll run down the card as it stands. Hopefully Jack Della will have a fight lined up before we record on Wednesday. Main event is Alexander Volkanovski back down to featherweight against the interim champ, Yair Rodriguez. Co-main event for the flyweight championship, Brandon Moreno, Alexander Pantoja. That is a rematch. Pantoja beat Moreno before gold was on the line. Robert Whittaker, Dricus Duplessis, which is probably number one contender fight, or should be, for the middleweight championship. Jalen Turner, Dan Hooker, Bo Nickel, Trayshawn Gore. Nothing to sneeze at with that main card at all. Prelims currently are Robbie Lawler, Nico Price, Yasmin Uruguay, Denise Gomes,
Jauregui,
Alonzo Jauregui, right? Excuse me, I forgot. Jimmy Crute, Alonzo Manafield, and then it was supposed to be Jack Della, Sean Brady, which is another fantastic prelim card too. Early prelims: Victor Petrino, Marcin Praccio, Cameron Simon, Gumby's favorite fighter, versus Terrence Mitchell, Shannon Ross, Jesus Santos Aguiar, and Kamala Kirk Esteban Ribovitz. Very good fight card, Dan.
Did you mention Tetsuya Taira?
Tetsuya Taira is not listed here, but I did hear he was getting
pushed. Yeah, he's fighting Edgar Cherise on that one.
Whoever that is.
He's the one who he was supposed to fight on Contender Series this year, but they pulled him off of it, obviously. And he was on Contender Series last year. He's the one who lost to Clayton Concrete.
Okay, like I'm supposed to know all this stuff. Like I'm supposed to remember that. But speak on the card, Dan. This is a proper pay-per-view card, not like UFC 289.
Yeah, I like it a lot. It's a little bit of a bummer that we lost Brady, Jack Della. I like Cameron Simon versus Christian Rodriguez is a lot better of a fight. That one was off. This one was originally supposed to have Manel Cape and Davison Figueiredo too, and Figueiredo's, you know, nowhere near ready to compete. But like at the same time, like what more could you want out of a main card than that? You got your hyper prospect Bo Nickel in action against maybe his toughest test. You got two phenomenal title fights. That are not just like, I mean, I guess this is the third time we've seen Pantoja versus Moreno, but it's not like, you know, it's not like we're watching Moreno Figueiredo 9 or whatever that would be, or you know, Volkanovski versus Max 7. So like it's fresh matchups, and then you get to see Jalen Turner probably catch a body, so that's fun too.
Yeah, I like Jalen Turner, so I hope he can get himself going on a roll here. All right, so we have that to look forward to. But before we get to that, we've got a Monday, our typical Monday non-UFC episode coming up. We're going to be covering LFA this week. Still counting down the days, the minutes, until Dana White Contender Series is back in our lives. Until then, make sure, like I told you, Discord, if you're not in there, get in there. Lots of fun. Everyone is positive. We have a good time always. sportsgamblingpodcast.com/Discord. That was not sarcastic. Everyone really is positive. We really do have a fun time. Twitter, SGP and MMA, Jeff Fox writer, Gumby Vreeland. That's all the spots to go there. The Top Turtle MMA podcast, Gumby minus Jeff, which sounds like a dream to most of you. You can listen to that. All my good stuff. I told you all my MMA writing can get into your inbox along with my free pick'em contest every week, moneymma.substack.com. And if you refer friends to it, you can get free subscriptions. So even better. And then all good things in the sports gambling world can be found at sportsgamblingpodcast.com. So as said, we'll be back tomorrow with our UFC preview. We'll be previewing it, not UFC, excuse me, LFA preview. Preview it would be the Georgia Viking, Jeff Fox, and Foxy Daniel Vreeland will be by my side. Not literally, but, you know, in spirit. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye.